listener-supported KTOO. Welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. It's Wednesday, September 11th, 2024. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Gunath Chish, Hawa, Toexik Nusum, Salama. Thank you for joining the conversation. On today's show, we chat with W. Todd Hunt and Sally Schlichting about Saturday's Conbrio Chamber Series at the Alaska State Museum. KTOO's news team is here to talk election season from candidates, issues on the ballot, and the upcoming election guide and forums from KTOO. And this Friday, a free seminar, Avoiding the Wrong Turns in Medicare and Social Security, is happening to help you navigate your way around retirement income and benefits. Those conversations plus Tongass voices and more coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon.
Support from Hanson Gress. Seeking curious people who like technology, network engineering, and customer support. Opportunities for those who thrive on problem solving. Details at hansongress.com/careers.
You're listening to KTOO's Tlingit Word of the Week. This week's word comes from Kakwanish George Davis. And the word this week is heen.
Heen.
That means water. And here is a sentence.
Heen chech natif.
Get me a drink of water. Let's hear it again.
Heen.
Water. Gunash Chisht Hune Lance Twitchell, Goldbelt Heritage Foundation, and the University of Alaska Southeast for this audio.
Kahuan Ish, George Davis was Tukdain Tan and the child of a Tsagwe Di man. He grew up in Qiq, Cake, Alaska, and learned to speak well because he would always bring traditional foods to the elders there. As someone who fished a lot and spent time on the land, he knew Tlingit place names all over the area, and he learned many stories and advanced ways of speaking.
And tune in next week for another Tlingit Word of the Week from KTOO.
Listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. This Saturday, September 14th at 2 p.m. at the Alaska State Museum, Conbrio Chamber Series presents William Todd Hunt and Doug Smith playing German romantic works for the clarinet and piano, one of which you're listening to right now, which is Brahms. And here to help me out and talk a little bit more about this are Sally Schlichting, head of Cambrio Chamber Series, and William Todd Hunt. And Todd, the name for this production, can you say it for us?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can. Romantische.
Romantische.
Yeah.
That's a German word.
It is a German word.
Okay.
It's, what a coincidence that it's all German romantic music.
That's
and
right.
German romantic music. And what are we listening to right here? We're listening
so this
to
is,
a little bit of Brahms.
Mm-hmm, yeah, this is the second movement of the Brahms Sonata, what I'm closing out the concert with. The second of three, so it's the middle movement of that.
Okay, and this is you playing along with Doug?
Yeah, this is Doug and I in the museum, in fact.
Oh, wow.
In our dress rehearsal a week ago or whatever that was.
Wow, that's really nice. I'm curious if we turn it up a little bit, if we can hear the... Yeah, that sort of... I just think the museum has such a great acoustic sound. Yeah,
it
can
does.
You tell us a little bit about working in that space?
Yeah, it's it's very different sounding than any rehearsal space we have.
Yeah,
because it's usually either in my studio or at Doug's home where we practice the most, which are not nearly as live. And of course, the pianos are all very different as well.
That's right.
And so that's a challenge for him. Having to play on a piano that feels different. I mean, everything is like looks the same, of course, but all pianos they respond differently. And for me, playing in a different space and hearing a different sound from the piano, like creates its own like interesting, not problems really, but things to deal with.
Challenges.
Yeah.
So, but it also, I guess you could say challenges and opportunities, right?
And opportunities. Yeah. Actually, sure. Yeah. Because, you can use that, the ring that the atrium has, you can use that to your advantage as well.
Okay. So, Sally, this is the... I don't know. This is a few times now that you've been in the atrium there at the Alaska State Museum. It's a wonderful partnership that you have with them. Can you tell us a little bit more about why you started to perform and take Cambrio Chamber Series into the museum?
Yeah, no, it was years ago when I started this series, I was talking to Bob Banghart, who at the time was the director of the museum, and he had actually intentionally made sure that the design of that building was acoustically designed for performing, musical events. And I, as soon as I went in there, and I think I played a little bit of music in there, I was like, oh my gosh, we've got to have concerts in here. And so they have been very welcoming and really wonderful about hosting us through this partnership with the Friends of the Alaska State Museum. And we're just really honored to play there. And it's become a very popular venue with audience members. I encourage you, if you want to come Saturday, come a little early to make sure you get a seat because it's been getting very full. And I think in future performances, we may be looking at adding a performance at another venue just so that we can make sure everybody gets to hear the great music.
That's so interesting. And you can spend the next few days practicing the name, Romantische.
Right.
Romantische.
Not Shea.
Right.
Okay, that's good. Good to see. You got to practice, right? Of course, you can follow Cambrio on their Facebook page. You can just, on Facebook, you can... search Cambrio Chamber Series and you'll see their thing. But you can also reach out by phone at 907-957. What's the last four?
3488.
3488. 957-3488. Somehow my notes missed an 8.
At CambrioChamberSeries@gmail.com.
Yeah, so CambrioChamberSeries@gmail.com. And it is... pay as you can, which is something that you've also been doing, which I think is fantastic. It sort of makes the music accessible. It feels like a lot of the times that, the opera or the symphony or, not necessarily ours here, but just in general that they are an elitist art form and therefore they cost more to go to attend. Obviously, when you have a giant orchestra and you're paying everybody, that can be an issue. I know that the Juno Symphony here, a lot of those folks are volunteer in that, right? But this is, two dudes on some instruments, right?
Oh, yeah.
We do want to really reach reach the whole community as much as we can.
And so. I think that's great that you're and you're doing it at a right time of day. It's at 2 o'clock in the afternoon on Saturday. And I'm assuming that the program is probably what, an hour and a half or so?
Yeah, it's a well it'll be an hour? It's about an hour's worth of music.
Okay.
And there'll be an intermission as well.
Yeah.
Great.
So,
So let's talk about the program. We heard the Brahms. What was you told us what that was.
Right. So opening up the program with the Mendelssohn Sonata, Felix Mendelssohn, who wrote this piece when he was 15 years old.
What?
Which is, it's ridiculous. It's totally ridiculous.
I'm going to put that under us while we're talking because it's beautiful.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, there's a little recording of the second movement of that as well. It's a, for somebody who was 15, it's totally miraculous.
Wow.
It's not recorded very much, and you don't ever hear it being played in recitals and whatnot very often too, but I ran across it and was like, oh, this is a really nice opener. It's kind of easier to listen to, you know, gets people sort of in the mood and sets the tone, and then we move on to a little more serious things.
They're all easy to listen to. They're gorgeous. gorgeous.
And so this that we're listening to, this is the second movement of that piece?
Mm-hmm. Right, okay. So each of these, actually all three of the pieces I'm doing have three movements each. So that's really... Yeah.
Well, let's just listen to this for just a minute, just to hear how it sounds, the quality. Yeah, that's lovely. Are there particular challenges with the clarinet and the piano together, or are they pretty complementary?
They are very complementary, I found. Yeah. What's funny, actually, in rehearsals, Doug and I have discovered some spots where we're playing, and it's really kind of hard to tell who's, like, which instrument's playing. Like, it's got the piano sound, or the piano sounds like the clarinet, and the clarinet sounds a little bit like the piano.
Mm.
Yeah. So it works really well.
Simpatico.
Ah, yeah.
Right? They're very simpatico. Mm-hmm. That's kind of cool. And then what's the third... piece on the program.
Oh, right. The third piece, which is actually the middle piece on the program.
Oh, middle piece.
But,
okay.
Yeah, sure. It's the Schumann Fantasy pieces, which were originally written for clarinet, I've got to say, but cellists play it a lot.
I like it on clarinet, though.
Yeah. It is really nice. I heard it for the first time on cello and was mesmerized by these three pieces. Fantasy pieces, kind of meaning that they don't have any real form, you know, because we just came out of, like, romantic music came like after the classical period where everything had form and structure, and you do this formulaic kind of music where you do this and then you do this and then you do this. But these pieces are just, here's a nice little melody. Now we're gonna do something else for a little while. Maybe come back to it. Maybe do something else. It's real free form and...
Flights of fancy.
It's flights of fancy. Yeah.
And how do you decide on a program and pick these three pieces?
Okay, so yeah, this is actually a kind of an interesting thing. Doug and I just wanted to play some stuff together. Like, we weren't talking about a recital. We're just like, hey, let's play some stuff. And Doug was like, hey, pick some things out and let's have a look at them. So I was like, I don't know, I grabbed these things and like these three pieces were among them. And as we were kind of working on them going, you're like, you know what? We've got a program. So it's like, whoa.
Interesting.
What do you mean do a recital? I can't do a recital. I haven't played a recital, like a solo recital in many, many years, like early 90s, we're talking.
Wow.
Yeah, so I did my undergrad in saxophone and did lots of recitals, but then I did all of my graduate work in conducting and hardly ever played. Came here. I've done a duet recital with Rick Trostel a number of years ago where we kind of split the program. But other than that... Yeah,
this is a rare sighting.
This
Todd
is a
Hunt
very and... rare sighting, and actually the first recital I've ever done on clarinet.
Wow.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you about that in terms of the clarinet. How did you start playing that? When did you start playing?
I started. It's sort of a soft start because my aunt gave me the clarinet that I am playing right now. It was her old one, when I was in high school. I dinked around with it a little bit. I was like, wow, this is really hard. Put it down. And in undergrad, I took like a year of lessons there. Mm. And it's like, okay, I've kind of got a hang of this. But then I was going to graduate with my saxophone degree, so I didn't really play it anymore. And then I went to grad school in conducting and didn't play it at all. And I got here and was like, oh, I could teach clarinet. I've got a clarinet. Let's get that thing out. And yeah, it's really kind of grown ever since I've been here. And
does the work that you do with other instruments allow it to be a little bit easier to pick
up
the clarinet?
Oh, sure. The clarinet has some very different fingering challenges because it works differently than all of the others. But, and you know, really the way you kind of make music with the different instruments too is different, and the way you blow it. So yeah, a little bit.
I see. Yeah.
Not a whole lot. But one of the big things that like gave me the push to work on clarinet is the Icefield Quartet that Sally and I are in, along with Ben and Lena, who were, you know,
a couple weeks ago, the last recital.
Conbrio. So yeah, that's been really exciting, and I've been wanting to like, you know, up my clarinet skills. And
I love that. Yeah. So and when you talked about you and Doug sort of, you know, getting together, I was thinking like, so do classical musicians jam?
Actually, that's what it is. Yeah, that's we kinda were kind of jam. It's like, hey, let's jam. Let's get some music so we can read it, though.
Right. Yeah, not just making it up on the spot.
We were not making it up. Some of it we were making up on the spot, but that was not on purpose.
Right. As you were learning it, right? How long does it take to learn like a three movement piece?
Yeah, well, it totally depends. Like the Mendelssohn came pretty quick to me, except for, you know, a few little spots that I'm still working on. The Schumann is a little bit harder, but the Brahms is a big, big thing to try to like really make perfect because it's very complex and like every note has like some sort of meaning, and putting that together with the piano that has an equal sort of musical role as the clarinet does. So, you know, you work on your parts separately, then try to put them together and make sense out of it. It's a big, big thing.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's nice. Late Brahms.
And it's very late Brahms.
Yeah. Like he came out of retirement to write these pieces.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So you've got like something from Mendelssohn from like teenage years, Brahms from later years.
Right.
Yeah.
And then Schumann in the middle.
Schumann in the middle.
Yeah.
Why not?
Right.
I love it. That's so cool. And Sally, what's next for Conbrio after this recital on Saturday?
Well, it's kind of fun because the next concert's not until April, but it's called Tangle of Rainbows, and it features music by this French 20th century composer named Olivier Messiaen. But it's featuring Todd and Ben and Lena in the quartet for The End of Time, which is a massive, epic work that's, it's going to be amazing. And then I'm like crashing the party and doing a short piece by Olivier Messiaen called The Blackbird, which actually, he was an ornithologist. So it's really one of the first pieces that really intentionally mimics actual song of bird song.
Awesome.
Yeah, and an interesting thing about this piece is it was written and premiered in a World War II prisoner of war camp.
The quartet in April.
If you only named three people.
Yeah. Jamila
Halashwe is coming down from Fairbanks to play that part.
Okay. Yeah.
And I'll be playing my piece with Kyle Farley Robinson.
Gotcha. So, okay. And that's for April.
That's April.
We're looking ahead to that. You can, of course, follow Conbrio on Facebook. You can reach out via email, conbriochamberseries@gmail.com, or you can call 907-957-3488. But what you need to know is that this Saturday at 2 p.m. is Romantische.
Good.
Did I get it?
Nice.
All right. Oh, it's with me. See, you can
Romantische.
If I can do it, anybody can do it. but it's happening at 2 p.m. this Saturday at the Alaska State Museum. They'll be playing Mendelssohn, Schumann, and Brahms, and it's Doug Smith and William Todd Hunt. It's a German romantic works for the clarinet and the piano.
Yeah.
I love that.
Doesn't that sound amazing?
Awesome. Well, Gwyneth Cheese for coming in today and telling us a little bit about it. And we got to hear a little bit of it, which is really good. And I really appreciate you being here. And what do you say? You don't say break a leg. What do you? You don't say break a string. What do you say?
Oh, for musicians.
Like, what do you say for like?
Yeah, well, opera singers say toy, toy, toy.
Okay.
Which is, yeah. That's their own thing.
I know dancers say maird.
Right? Yeah. Right? I didn't want to say that on the air, though.
Well, nobody knows.
Some people know. But yeah, I don't know. Not really have
so you
thing.
Don't say anything?
We're just like all business.
Yeah, we're just all business.
You're just like, leave me alone. Let me play.
It's like, come on, I got to practice.
Dark at me. All right. Well, I really appreciate you being here. Thanks so much. Gunnath Cheech, it's Saturday at 2 p.m. at the Alaska State Museum, the Conbrio Chamber Series.
Yep. Yeah. Pay as you can.
Pay as you can. Yes. Thank you, Sally.
Thank you.
Okay. Up next, Tongass Voices, Perspectives from the Homelands of the Akwan and Beyond. Megan Tabachek has been with Trail Mix for 4 years now, and she's done a lot of the dirty work. The nonprofit has maintained many of Juneau's beloved trails since 1993, and she says the crews look a lot different than they used to. Volunteers can join in on trail work each Saturday this month. This weekend, volunteers are meeting at Black Bear Trail from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m.
I'm Megan Tabachek, and I'm the executive director at Trail Mix Inc. Our season starts in May, and I started in April. Luckily, I had been working with Ryan for a long time. I've been at Trail Mix for 4 years now, so I had a running start compared to other directors, but it definitely was a busy time. Trail Mix is a very interesting kind of nonprofit. You got to know how to do the trail work, but then there's also like all of the meat of running a nonprofit. So I actually was never supposed to work at Trail Mix, and then the pandemic happened, and one of the few jobs that was happening was trail work, and I'd always really wanted to do it, but I thought of, saw myself more as a guide, but then pandemic, I applied. I absolutely loved it. At the end of my summer, I was going into my senior year at UAS in the Environmental Studies program, and needed an internship, so I begged Ryan O'Shaughnessy, who is the former director, for an internship. I got one, and then I just never really left. I loved learning. Building trails is really fun. Learning about why and how we build trails is really cool. So it was just really fun learning about all these inner workings and what goes on behind the scenes just to make a half-mile stretch of trail better. And so I was hooked. I've really worn all the hats there is to wear at Trail Mix. Almost every single weekend this entire summer, we've had a volunteer group out on the trails, and it's really cool to see how much our community loves our trails and wants to spend a sunny or a rainy Saturday on the trails with us. I am not the buffest person in the world, and I was really nervous about that when I first started working for Trail Mix, and this is actually something that's been really, really cool over the past 5 years at Trail Mix, is you used to have to be pretty buff. I mean, it wasn't a straight-up requirement, but in years prior, we hired just people who are great at trail work and were really strong. And then a couple years ago, during the pandemic, we made this shift of saying, what if we just hired really good people and taught them how to be trail workers? Because turns out you can teach good people how to be good trail workers, but you can't teach good trail workers how to be good people. So if you were to look at photos of Trail Mix 10 years ago, it's primarily 25 to 30-year-old white men, maybe a couple women, very infrequently. That was actually one of the reasons I almost didn't apply to Trail Mix, is because I didn't see any women in the photos. And over the past 5 years, you know, we've seen a huge swap in our demographics. This year, we have more women and non-binary people working at Trail Mix than men. One of the great things about trail work is there's always workarounds. You know, you can't lift something up with your hands, ask a partner and maybe you'll do a team lift. Something's too big for the whole team to lift, we're going to set up a grip hoist and use mechanical advantage to lift this thing. So there's really all sorts of workarounds. And oh, you're not comfortable with chainsaws, that's fine. There's always other tasks. A lot of tasks go into making a trail happen, and so there's always a place for everyone on the trail.
That was Megan Tabachek with Trail Mix for this week's Tongass Voices. We'll be right back with Election Preview with KTOO's Adeline Baxter. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Well, last night we had the first presidential debate, but election season is also fruitful all throughout Juneau and the state of Alaska, with our municipal election on October 1st and the state/national election on Tuesday, November 5th. And here to guide us is KTOO's Adeline Baxter from the news team. Gunath Chisha Igudi, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you joining me, Adeline. Wasi'iti, how's it going?
Pretty good, Boston. Thanks for having me.
Of course. So, last night we got, I think everybody sort of got into the, not so much the mood, but definitely the season, if you haven't already been. I know we also had some local forums that have been happening already in town. There was the Douglas Candidate Forum on Sunday over in, at the Douglas Library, and there's been a few other organizations that have been hosting them. And we'll talk in a little bit about the forums that are coming up next week here at KTOO. But first, I wanted to just dive in right away. We mentioned that there's two elections, right? Sometimes that's a little confusing. There's actually two elections. So October 1st is our municipal election, and then November 1st is when we will be voting for our, you know, our Congress and national elections, right? So,
And state, yes.
And state, yes, and the state legislature. Okay, so in the municipal elections, and you can go, it's really cool, you can go to juneau.org/clerk/elections, and they have a sample ballot if you wanted to get sort of a preview of that. And I believe, when are ballots being mailed out, Adeline? Is that today?
Hey. Are being mailed out tomorrow. So they're going to start arriving here in Juneau in, you know, the next 2 to 3 days.
Okay.
Probably.
And people are able to mail those in, or how do people submit their ballots?
Yep, they can mail them back. They do need postage. And then there are also going to be, if you don't want to have to, you know, pay for postage, there are also designated drop boxes that are around town. And those are listed on the city website. We'll have them listed on our website too, ktoo.org/elections. But there's one at, let's see, Auk Bay Harbor. I believe there's another one at the Statter Harbor. You know what? Actually, I'm going to have to double check where those are exactly. But rest assured that there are some very prominently displayed ballot drop boxes. And then, of course, you can also take them to City Hall and drop them at the vote center there, all the way up until October 1st.
And on October 1st, is there still a place to go and vote in person if you want to do that, or is this an all-mail election?
There is. There's not the regular precincts, but the City Hall still has in-person voting and everything, and so people are more than welcome to come and drop off their ballots in person. You know, that's still like a really special thing that a lot of people really enjoy, that kind of in-person experience. So that's absolutely, I believe City Hall closes. You know what?
They might
Don't quote me on what time they close. It might be, it's either 7 or 8 p.m. on October 1st.
On October 1st. But so there won't be like normally in the past, I'm just getting this clear for folks. So in the past, you've been able to go to your local like election place, your local place to vote, but that's not happening. You can either mail in your ballot or you can go to City Hall. Is that correct?
City Hall, and I misspoke before, it's also the Mendenhall Public Library. So that's also going to be open all through this period from, they're both going to open Monday, September 16th, and then they'll be open until 8 p.m. on October 1st. So
okay.
Both the Mendenhall Valley Library and City Hall Chambers.
So great.
City Hall Assembly
Chambers. A place downtown and a place out in the valley for folks to be able to do that in person if they want to, which is really
yes.
Good. Okay. So let's first talk about the municipal election and the candidates for assembly. I'm hopeful that we don't have nearly as many as we had last year.
Oh, well, it's slightly less, but we still have 15 people, which is, you know, healthy. But hey, I think it was 2 years ago, we had very few people running for office. So it's been really nice to see so many people wanting to serve the last two election cycles. So there's, we've got, let's see, there's 6 people running for school board, and then 5 people running for the District 2 assembly seat. And then there are 2 candidates running for District 1 assembly and 2 people running for mayor.
Okay, great. And some of those folks are what I guess you would call, they don't list it on the ballot this way, but there are incumbents, yeah?
Yes, right. The Mayor Weldon is running for re-election, and she's the only person running against her is Angela Rodell. And then neither of the other assembly races have an incumbent in them. District 2 is Michelle Hale. She is not running for re-election. And District 1 is Wahal Gadak Barbara Blake, also not running for re-election. So those are all new candidates. That will be someone new will be representing those districts. And then for the school board, three of them are incumbents, Elizabeth Sidden, Amber Fromhers, and Will Muldoon. And then there are three new candidates as well.
I see. Okay. So that's a, yeah, I guess when I was talking about the number of candidates, I meant just for the assembly, because it felt like last year there were like 10 or 12 candidates for assembly, just the assembly. And I know there was also...
Yes, it is a bit tamer this year.
Yeah. So that's good. And this is a good time to mention, but I know that KTOO, because you mentioned some of the names, there's a lot of names, and maybe you don't know who those people are. And so I know that KTOO in the past has put together an election guide. And of course, you can also follow everything. There's calendar dates and all kinds of information and stories that we've run on the election at kto.org/elections. That's where it's like a catch-all page for this stuff. Are we doing an election guide?
Yes, we are. Yeah, Clarice Larson, our city reporter, has been working really, really hard. She's been interviewing all of the candidates, and so we are going to put their transcribed interviews up on our election guide. That's going to publish on Friday, should be just in time for you to get your ballots. And you'll be able to compare and contrast, just like other years, the candidates' answers on certain issues. So if you click on the question, like there's a question about Telephone Hill, another about, you know, preparing for glacial outburst flooding. And so you can see how all of the candidates responded to that and really kind of focus in on who most aligns with your values and opinions and make your best educated voting decision.
I don't think I was necessarily supposed to do this, but last year I know that I actually pulled up the guide while I was in the voting booth. But it's the same as doing it at home if I had the ballot at home and I was just using the election. But because you want to know, right? You want to know, okay, let me ask, right. Let me figure out where they stand on this particular thing or that particular thing. And so that's going to be a valuable guide for folks to have. And that's available on kto.org. There's no charge for that. It's all part of the service that KTO offers the community. And I know you all work really hard on getting those interviews and getting those statements from folks for the election guide. So that'll be coming out on Friday. Now, I do think I want to talk a little bit about the issues on the ballot, which is interesting because we were talking about the school board candidates. So maybe let's start with that one, that there is some, there's a couple of recall petitions on the ballot. Can you tell us what you know about that and why they're on the ballot?
Yes. So there are two recall petitions. One is for the Juneau School Board President, Dee Dee Sorensen, and the other is for the Vice President, Emil Mackey. And those were submitted by a group of concerned citizens that specifically their concerns are about the budget deficit that the Juneau School District has been dealing with for the past year. And so their complaints are somewhat tied to that, although you'll see in the phrasing of the recall initiatives on the ballot that, you know, that there's some other kind of things wrapped up in that, but that is going to determine whether Sorensen and Mackey are recalled from the board. And if they are, then I really that's going to, you know, create some vacancies, obviously, on the board. And I believe that there will have to be a special election to fill those vacancies.
Oh, so if one of them or both of them are recalled, they're not just going to take the next ballot getters on the school board election from Amber, Jeff, Elizabeth, Jenny, Will, Michelle, or any other write-in candidates that might be in there. But because you're voting for three school board members,
Yep, there are three open seats on the school
board.
Three
open seats. And so if these recall positions went through, then they would have to do a special election. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. Yeah, and it is cool on the ballot that they have sort of the petitioners committee verbatim statement of grounds of why, and it's really just about a sentence and a half or so. And then they have a verbatim rebuttal statement from each of those folks, Dee Dee Sorensen and Emil Mackey. And people can read those and make their determination on that. So that's kind of cool.
And Clarice Larson will also have an additional story about that recall and all of the other ballot propositions. Those will be coming out in the next week or two leading up to the election.
Great.
So that people can, again, make their most informed decisions.
Now, on the propositions, there's a couple of, bond issues. Is that what that is? Yeah. General obligation bonds for a couple of different things. Can you quickly just mention what those two propositions are?
Yep. Ballot Proposition 1 is asking voters whether to approve, I believe, $12.7 million in bond debt to help cover the cost of replacing the radio system used by local first responders. And so that is what allows them to communicate with one another, both the police department and the fire department. And then the Proposition 3 is asking voters whether to approve $10 million in bond debt to help cover the cost of replacing the wastewater clarifier building in the Juno Douglas wastewater treatment plant. So, that's a thing that appears on the ballot every so often for wastewater and various other infrastructure upkeep kind of things for the city.
Maintenance for that. Okay. And then lastly on the ballot is a very contested by both sides issue. Can you tell us a little bit about what that proposition is? There's a lot of language on this proposition, and people will want to go and read that in detail to really understand what's being asked of them here. But can you give us sort of the general overview? And I know Clarice has run a couple of stories recently covering both sides of this issue, but just give us a little preview of that.
Right. Yeah. Well, and this is Proposition 2, and it's the Ship-Free Saturday proposition, which I'm sure is a familiar term to a lot of folks by now, because there's been a lot of campaigning on either side, whether you saw the group of people who were gathering signatures to get it on the ballot last spring, or you've been seeing a lot of the signs around town from the opposition who, you know, obviously do not want to see this passed. And it's a citizen-led initiative, basically, that asks voters whether Juno should ban large cruise ships on Saturdays and on the 4th of July starting next year. So this would take effect very quickly. It would impact next cruise ship season, but there has already been some sort of some objections from the cruise ship industry and some of them calling into question whether this would be even legal for Juno to do if voters do approve it. So there are some questions about the implementation and how that would work. But the initiative is on the ballot, and that's, you know, it's ultimately something that voters are going to decide on, whether how things go about, you know, if it were to pass, how things go about being implemented after that. I think that's still kind of remains to be seen, but there's obviously a lot that could happen either way. I think even if it doesn't pass, I think this has definitely opened up a really big discussion in town that's been brewing for a while now. So it's been really interesting to watch that play out. And yes, Clarice has been doing a ton of reporting, and I'm sure we'll have more leading up to October 1st, because this is really the one that's a real lightning rod for folks.
Yeah. And I'm sure we're going to talk about the forums happening next week. And I just quickly want to run through the state elections. It's all of the state legislature candidates in Juneau are running unopposed, and it's all the incumbents.
That's right.
So there's not a lot to talk about there. There's one national race for Mary Peltola running for her her House of Representatives seat, and there's a couple of challengers to that. And so that's sort of the big news on the state and national level, of course. But and that one is, you know, November 5th, of course. And this municipal election is on October 1st. And speaking of that, let's talk about the forums that are happening here at KTO, because some of these issues, perhaps the school board issue, the recall might come up, and also the Ship Free Saturday might come up as questions to these candidates in terms of where they stand on some of these issues. Can you tell us about, there's going to be two nights again. Can you run that down for us?
Yes, absolutely. So next Tuesday, we are doing our annual League of Women Voters of Juneau candidate forums. And so this is an event that's put on by the League of Women Voters, and then it's moderated by ourselves and the Juneau Empire. And we are going to be carrying that on the radio and on TV, actually, for the first time this year. It's also going to air on 360 TV, which is exciting. But also, people are really encouraged to come in person. Both events start at 7 p.m., and this is this coming Tuesday, the 17th. That's when the mayoral candidates and assembly candidates will be on the stage answering questions from moderators. And then the next day, Wednesday, is the school board candidates. So just an hour long each forum. We are really looking forward to seeing a big turnout from the community. People always like to come, and just like with all the other forums that go on in town, you know, get to see how their candidates respond to questions on the fly, because these are not, you know, questions that they've had time to prepare for necessarily in advance. They don't know what we're going to ask. And so it's a really good, I think, indicator of, you know, people's just ability to respond to issues as they come up for them. Obviously, these are a lot of topics that are well known in town, so you can kind of predict what we're going to ask. But it's always really informative. And yeah, like I said, it'll air on the radio as well at 7 p.m., but definitely encourage people to come down in person.
Absolutely. And of course, you can find out more and follow at kto.org/elections for the election guide and for information again on those public forums next week downstairs here at KTOO. And it's going to be moderated by Clarice Larson here from KTOO and Mark Sabatini from the Juneau Empire. And all the candidates will be there. And of course, for information on Juneau elections, you can go to juneau.org/clerk/elections. And the national election also has a sample ballot. You can go to elections.alaska.gov for the state and national elections as well. Adeline, thank you so much for running all that down for us. It's good to get those details out, and so people can be informed and make a decision. And we're going to be getting their ballots here pretty soon. And so that election guide is going to be very helpful, as will the forum. So I appreciate you coming on and telling us a little bit about it.
Thanks, Boston.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, up next, we'll preview this Friday's free seminar that will help answer questions about Social Security and Medicare. This is Juneau Afternoon on KTOO. KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Occoquan. The Clan Edi have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot once part of the tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages, and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations.
Let's have a star party. This is Steve Kosas with the Marine Track Planetarium. I'm going to talk about the fall. The month of September is when darkness returns. Hello, darkness, my old friend. The astronomical definition of darkness is the sun has to be more than 18 degrees below the horizon from April to the end of August. It is not. So we have what is called midnight twilight. But starting in September, we have the return of darkness. So if we have a clear night, it's more chance to see the aurora and the possibility of a comet later this year. Also in September, we have the equinox, which is around September 21st. And that's when we have the greatest rate of change of daylight. We lose around 5 minutes a day around the time of the September equinox. As a contrast, at the poles, you have a switch of 6 months of daylight and 6 months of night. And as a further contrast, at the equator, sunset and sunrise times hardly change all year round. So you have 12 hours of daytime and 12 hours of night with very little change all year. Also, the sun's angle when it sets is more extreme. So twilight is very short near the equator. So make sure you have a flashlight with you near sunset. This is Steve Kosas with the Marie Drake Planetarium. Our public shows are on our website at mariedrakeplanetarium.org. Thank you.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. This Friday, Search and Wayfinder Wealth are teaming up to offer a free seminar on ways to navigate Social Security and Medicare. And it's called Avoiding the Wrong Turns in Medicare and Social Security. It's happening this Friday, September 13th from 11 to 2 p.m. Lunch will be provided, and it's going to be at the Huddle, Suite 9 at 9109 Mendenhall Mall Road. It's just down from the Super Bear. And joining me now is Cynthia Gibson from Wayfinder Wealth. Thank you so much for joining us today. How's it going, Cynthia?
Goodness, she's good. Thank you.
Okay, great.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. So tell us a little bit about what's going to be happening on Friday.
Okay. Well, Susan Bryles and I teamed up. We're both from Sitka. And I found that a lot of times when I help people, I'm a CFP and I help people, you know, plan for retirement, of course. And in doing that, we're always asking one of the top questions, which is when should I apply for Social Security? The other top question is how does Medicare work in all of that? And when people do apply for Medicare, which is usually almost always at age 65, one of the questions on the application is, would you like to start your Social Security income now? So we teamed up because these two things are happening almost always at the same time, or at least decisions about these two things, Medicare and Social Security income, are happening at the same time. And so I focus on the Social Security piece. She is a Medicare specialist, and that's her full-time job, to help people enroll in Medicare and make sure that they are taking advantage of all the benefits that we are all due, you know, at that age, and that we don't miss any of our little opportune and window times in which we need to be applying. And so she will talk for an hour all about Part A, Part B, and all the things that you never knew you wanted to know about Medicare and how healthcare works, and kind of all the surprising ins and outs. And it's pretty basic and straightforward. In Alaska, we have something called classic Medicare or traditional Medicare. We don't have, in the lower 48 states, they have like a PPO or a, you know, a preferred provider option called Medicare Advantage and Medicare Part C, which we currently do not have available in Alaska because we just don't have enough people. So she'll talk all about the ins and outs of that, and also Medicare supplemental insurance. She explains what that is and how that may benefit people, and you know what to expect from that, as well as the drug plan. And then we'll have our little lunch break, about a half an hour. And you don't have to come to both of them if you just want to come to one talk or the other. But we'd love to have you at both if you're able to. And then I'll start speaking at 12:30. And I'm going to talk about, you know, Social Security and kind of all the myths. There's a lot of myths and misconceptions about Social Security. I think one of the biggest confusions is that there are three different zones. And believe it or not, there's different rules for the different zones. Everyone has what Social Security defines their full retirement age. And that's like a real official term, what your full retirement age is. And for everyone out there, it's anywhere from age 66 to 67. It used to be 65 many, many years ago, but 66 to 67, it depends on your year of birth. And once you get that down, then there's the time before you turn that full retirement age. The rules are different about what you can earn and about how to apply and so forth. Then the rules change again after you reach your full retirement age, and your money can then grow after that till age 70. And so there's a lot of confusion and misconception about how all that works. There's also things called spousal benefits. So if you're married or you were married for more than 10 years, you're eligible to receive a spousal benefit if it's larger than yours. Even if there's, you know, other marriages involved and things of that nature, there's survivor benefits. We'll talk about those. And then, you know, near and dear to my heart are the benefits that are affected by PERS and TERS. So in Alaska, particularly, it happens a lot throughout the United States, but really in Alaska, where you're a state worker and you're going to be receiving a pension from a government job in which you're not contributing to Social Security, then your Social Security benefit will be affected, or could be affected, I should say. Just depends on your other earnings during your lifetime. And that's called the windfall elimination provision or the government pension offset. Those are two different rules that govern your own benefits and then your spousal and survivor benefits that you're eligible to receive. So we're going to talk a lot about that because that's, you know, naturally in our state's capital, one of the big questions, and there's a lot of state workers.
Yeah.
Yeah. And some even cities, like the city of Sitka has that too.
I see. So one thing you said there that I want to highlight is what was interesting, which I'd never heard before, and this is why you want to go to a presentation like this, is that sort of the spousal benefit. So let's say you've been married and your spouse, mm-hmm. you know, passes away. And so you're, mm-hmm. but what's interesting is you said that if their Social Security benefit is larger than yours, then you get that mm-hmm. spousal benefit. If it's less, you wouldn't get it as an attack on to your Social Security. Is that what I understood there?
Right. Now, a spousal benefit means that your spouse is alive, even if it's an ex-spouse.
Oh, okay.
Because if they've passed away, then it's a survivor benefit.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So, mm-hmm. And so a spousal benefit is always one half. So say my husband, Keith, and I are married. And so if his benefit was say $3,000 and my benefit is only $1,000, my Social Security benefit, then I'm actually eligible to receive an additional $500 because I'm eligible to receive one half of his if it's bigger than all of mine.
Ah, okay. That is so interesting. Okay.
And I can still get that even if I divorce Keith, because I have been married to him for more than 10 years. And even if he remarries, I can still receive that. And his new wife can also receive that. But I can't get that if I remarry. I have to then go off my current spouse.
I see. Okay.
Now, if I've been divorced two or three times, I can go cherry pick which is the most, like which is the highest benefit for my spouse.
That's so,
you know, and
yeah. Yeah. That's a lot now, to navigate. Then, yeah.
Yeah. It's like this giant jigsaw puzzle that changes. And then it depends on all kinds of multiple things. And, you know, it depends on my current age when I want to apply. It depends on whether or not I'm working and if I'm of my full retirement age yet. And if I am working, how much money am I making? Because I am allowed to work a little bit until I turn my full retirement age. Then I can work as much as I want and still receive my benefit.
Yeah, I see. Okay. So we just have about a minute or so left. I wanted to make sure that we mention who should come to this seminar. What age should somebody be that comes to this? Mm-hmm. Is it valuable for somebody who's in their 30s or 40s?
Well, I think it is, especially if you work for the state of Alaska or you have worked for the state and you're going to be receiving any kind of a pension, even tier 4 people. Tier 4 people have a unique situation where they're not going to be getting a quote-unquote monthly pension, but they still have a defined pension from a government job and they're not contributing to Social Security. So they still have potential benefits that will be impacted. So we'll talk a little bit about what that means for Tier 4 people.
I see.
Okay. Or teachers, same with teachers, especially teachers, because, you know, at least with the state, you get a supplemental plan in place of Social Security. Teachers don't get anything. They just get their pension and that's it. No Social Security benefit or supplemental plan unless they're saving on their own. So definitely teachers. And also, you know, just I think the most people that are attracted to it are the ones that are reaching, you know, that Social Security planning age. So anyone 55 and above.
That's me.
yeah.
And so
it's fascinating. It's a great.
Yeah. I mean, it's like the ins and outs of that and learning that and talking to an expert who knows that stuff. Now, I saw that there was a phone number to call 907-966-2803. That's 966-2803 to reserve a spot. But can you just also show up?
Right. But what I'm going to
Oh, go ahead.
You can just show up, sure, but hopefully we have enough sandwiches. That's why we want people to RSVP so we have enough food.
Gotcha.
But I'm going to give you a different phone number because, you know, Sitka has this internet problem. And even though that's a landline, we're still having trouble with our landlines and everything. So I'm going to give you my cell phone. And I'm here in Juneau now. So it's 907-738-0655.
And that's to register. 907-738-0655. That's where you want to go. Or you can show up. Of course, we want to make sure we get enough sandwiches for everybody. It's going to be happening at the Huddle, Suite 9, 9109 Mendenhall Mall Road. It's this Friday, September 13th from 11 to 2. Lunch is provided. It's going to be navigating the rules of the road for Medicare and Social Security. Cynthia, thanks so much for joining me and telling me a little bit about this. And again, to register, it's 907-738-0655. Gunath Sheesh, thank you so much for being here today.
Terrific. Gunath Sheesh.
That will do it for today's Juno Afternoon. On tomorrow's show, we'll chat about a documentary that's entitled Cruise Boom that will start airing on PBS and KTOO this week. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Trepp. Gunath Sheesh.